My name is Ben Burrell, and this is Bob Dylan Album by Album, a podcast that brings you an in-depth look at each Bob Dylan studio recording record by record. Welcome to the first episode on Bringing It All Back Home. We're going to look at this album over a few episodes. What a great album this is. For a while, it was my favourite Dylan album that was eclipsed somewhat by Oh Mercy, which I think that the rate of classics is probably higher on Bringing It All Back Home. In fact, it's definitely higher on Bringing It All Back Home. But, you know, I just love Oh Mercy, as regular listeners of this podcast will know, and are now probably shouting at their mobile devices and or laptops to please stop talking about Oh Mercy again. Bringing It All Back Home, though, is a great album, a brilliant record, and it's an album that was my very first purchase of a Bob Dylan record. I've listened to his music ever since I was young via my dad, kind of being forced to listen to it, if you will, but I got into him when I was leaving college and going to university, I started to buy his albums my kind of first week of university, and I bought Bring It All Back Home first. I don't know why, maybe because of Subterranean Homesick Blues, and I also liked It's All Over Now, Baby Blue. I didn't particularly know the song that well, but I really liked the title. I was sort of drawn in by that title. So I think this album is absolutely wonderful. It's one of Bob's best. It has some of his best songs on it. I think it's a really important album as well, so we are dedicating multiple episodes to it. And that will start today with Subterranean Homesick Blues. That is the focus of this episode, as is Maggie's Farm, two songs that are intrinsically linked. Before we go there, thank you for your messages this season so far. I had quite a few messages in the last couple of days. Hi to Matt, hi to Kirsty as well, and hi to Zachary. All messaging saying, are you not going to do Knocked Out Loaded then? And the answer to that is, no, I can't face it. I don't want to put myself through doing an episode on the album. No, I'm joking. I have actually recorded an episode of that album. But like I was saying the other week, I had had my tonsils taken out recently. And that episode on Knocked Out Loaded was going to be the first episode of this season. And I recorded it not too long after I had my tonsils out. And as I was recording it, I thought it sounded fine. When I listened back recently, I thought it sounds awful. So I'm going to re-record it and put it out. But yeah, that is to come. I just mentally ticked it off my list and completely forgotten about it. So that will come at some point during these episodes on Bringing It All Back Home. It won't be an easy listen, will it? At least Brownsville Girls on it. That's the saving grace, isn't it? Also, thank you to you if you have donated via Buy Me a Coffee. Loads of donations coming in. They are so appreciated. Hi to Jim, thank you. Alan, thank you. Daniel, you now, thank you. Hi to Vinny as well. And hi to Jake and Jenny, thank you to you. And hi to CC as well. Thank you for your generous donation. You can tip the podcast. The link to the Buy Me a Coffee page is in this episode's description, as always. Right, let's take a look at it, shall we? Let's have our first glimpse at 1965's Bringing It All Back Home. Before Bringing It All Back Home, Bob Dylan was one type of artist. After it, he is another. This album is a line in the sand of destiny. Whilst Dylan would go on to reboot himself, his career, and his image multiple times after this, this was the first major one of these. It marked not only a change for him stylistically, but also a shift in what he could be. Bringing It All Back Home was really a stroke of genius from Bob, but not because the songs were classics. In fact, all they needed to be was good songs, rather than the incredible set that we actually got. But what Bob did that started with this LP not only separated him from his contemporaries, but it would lay the groundwork for the rest of his dynamic, ever-shifting career. Whilst he wowed the world as a folk troubadour, here he is, surpassing all of that. But it's not just one shift on this record. The image, the lyrical themes, the sounds, and the electric guitars all added up to something major for this artist. This was a full makeover to something completely different. And while he would have to suffer some pain brought on by these changes that were set in motion here on Bringing It All Back Home, it would actually make Bob Dylan the recording artist. Without this album, Bob might have stayed in his lane, forever known by his home genre and a particular sound. He could have grown old peddling folk albums and being successful, but Bob wanted something else. And there's one song that embodies this change. This song really has it all. It's fresh, there's strange, enticing lyrics, and a sound that is about as far away from folk as you could get in 1965.
John is in a basement, mixing up the medicine. I'm on the pavement, thinking about the government. The man in a trench coat, badge out, laid
says he's got a bad cough, wants to get it paid off. Look out, kid, it's something you did. God knows when, but you're doing it again. You better duck down.
The song manages to distill Dylan's love for Kerouac and Chuck Berry and Woody Guthrie all into one. Its beat poetry surrealism conjures images of drugs and outsiders, people refusing to conform to a previous way of thinking. In fact, Kerouac's The Subterraneans, a novel published in 1958, might even be inspiration for the title. The song seemingly lists wrongs with society, but also manages to celebrate them with a kind of underlying ridicule. There's allusions to perhaps specific moments of culture, as in the American Civil Rights Movement, for example, in the line, "Better stay away from those that carry round a fire hose." During the Civil Rights Movement, peaceful protesters were beaten and sprayed with high-pressure fire hoses. And elsewhere, where perhaps police corruption is mentioned, with a man in a trench coat with his badge out looking to get his cough paid off. There's foggy, drug-laden paranoia, a mistrust of authority, don't follow leaders, 20 years of schooling and they put you on the day shift, a futile examination of how society rewards people. Also, there's the constant feeling in this song of being held back or penned in. People like our narrator and Maggie and Johnny, they don't ever get to win, they'll always be suppressed. They owe $11 bills, but they've only got 10. The world isn't theirs to win, it's rigged for them to lose. The thing still all these years later that is stunning about this song and many others on this album is that it manages to deal with huge themes zoomed into minute detail. It's like this is all subtext. Dylan manages to say so much in such beautiful little vignettes, and while at the same time he is describing these things, the actual meaning is just out of reach. Brian Wilson once spoke about taking LSD and how much of the world he understood on it, how he could see himself as a baby, how he had revelations during his trips. This feels a little bit like that, not in terms of drugs, although they do seem to be more than present, but it feels like we're glimpsing into something that knows more than we do, that we can only just about comprehend. There's so much happening here, so much that is going on, it's almost difficult to process. All of life seems to be here in this song. There's parts of society that should be a force for good, like our policeman, but he seems to be in one of the worst states out of anyone in the song. This theme plays into another theme in the song, which is nihilism. There's a feeling of this is what we're told to do that runs throughout the tune, which is touched on in more detail as we reach the fourth verse of "Oh, get born, keep warm, short pants, romance, learn to dance, get dressed, get blessed, try to be a success, please her, please him, buy gifts, don't steal, don't lift, 20 years of schooling and they put you on the day shift." A damning evaluation of a dull life from womb to mid-level job. But while Dylan never crosses the line into precocious accuser of society, like I said earlier, he more parodies it. He chooses to highlight its ridiculousness. For example, "Don't follow leaders or watch the park in meters," which suggests that we shouldn't follow the people in power, they know as little as we do. But also, if they even find you violating something as small as parking restrictions, then they'll get you for it. Look out, kid, you're going to get hit, in other words. It's one thing to point out the wrongs in something, but it's a complete other to dismantle it with humour and flair. The sonics of the song lead us into Dylan's electric era, as Bob takes cues from Chuck Berry's Too Much Monkey Business. The lead guitar's bluesy riff takes the spotlight, but the clatter of the drums, the unrelenting acoustic rhythm guitar, and the wail of that harmonica really release the song. Dylan's delivery, often wrongfully quoted as the first rap performance, is also breathtaking. He simultaneously spits bars and also drawls the words in a kind of exhausted way. It's a performance that sounds like he's on uppers and downers, and somehow he's doing two things at once. His vocal is also confident. Compare it to something on the Freewheeling and you'll see the difference. Now, don't get me wrong, he was confident there too. His sparkly-eyed delivery was way beyond his years. But while that Dylan sounded like he was the clever kid throwing out some witty lines, here he sounds like a showman. It's like he's gone to the gym and bulked up. He has become a performer.
Oh, get sick, get well, hang around the inkwell, hang bell, hard to tell if anything is gonna sell. Try hard, get bought, get back, ride rail, get jail, jump bail, join the army if you fail. Look out, kid, you're gonna get hit by losers, cheaters, six-time users, hanging around the theaters. Girl by the whirlpools, looking for a new fool. Don't follow leaders, or watch your parking meters.
Closely linked to this song is another. It's track 3, Maggie's Farm. While it remains to be seen if the Maggie in both songs is the same character, the tone of the two tracks is very similar. And while Maggie's Farm lacks the ingenuity and dazzle of Subterranean Homesick Blues, it still manages to pack quite the punch. There's a recapping of that idea behind the lines in the previous song of "Wants $11 bills but you've only got 10," with lyrics here like, "Well, he hands you a nickel, he hands you a dime. He asks you with a grin if you're having a good time. Then he finds you every time you slam the door." This, once again, is an unfair, hard environment for our narrator. But this time, he's done with it. While in Subterranean Homesick Blues he was undermining it, here he's leaving it behind. He's constantly telling us he's not working for Maggie, who we can safely assume is some sort of establishment figure, or at least is part of the establishment. Although I will point out it's not former UK Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, as a few internet theories have suggested as part of the most Bobby over-analysis I've seen in a while. It's not her, mainly because we're a few decades away from her premiership at this point, and even Bob can't predict the future. But Maggie and her farm are definitely an old institution, just like that police officer in Subterranean Homesick Blues. And in fact, farming is a good representation of this. Whilst a crucial industry, it is also an old industry. The whole place and some of the characters seem quite cruel too. There's old age hinted at, again adding to that feeling of the farm representing something very conventional or conservative. But also it's quite Machiavellian as well. She lies about her age for a start, and there's also the killer line, "Everybody says she's the brains behind Pa." But our narrator is defiant. Dylan sings, "Well, I try my best to be just like I am, but everybody wants you to be just like them. They say sing while you slave and I just get bored. I ain't gonna work on Maggie's farm no more."
"Well, I try my best to be just like I am, but everybody wants you to be just like them. They say sing while you sleep and I just get bored. I ain't gonna work on Maggie's farm no more."
This song has been connected to an old blues number called "Down on Penny's Farm" by the Bentley Boys. In that song we hear of a similar situation. Here's the lyrics from verse 2. "Now you move out on Penny's farm, plant a crop of bacco and a little crop of corn. He'll come around and plan and plot till he gets himself a mortgage on everything you've got." The song details an old practice of sharecropping. Essentially, wealthy farm owners assigned or rented a plot of land to a sharecropper who worked and lived on that land. The owner provided seed and tools and collected a share of the harvested crop, which was usually about half. The sharecropper was also allowed to plant their own produce for food. Since the renters usually had little or no money of their own, they were also allowed to buy necessities from the plantation store on credit, which was then deducted from the renter's share of the harvest at the end of the year. This often left the sharecroppers in a state of crippling debt, often unable to earn money to leave the plantation and barely enough to just keep on living. So essentially, the sharecropping system was a feudal system. Thank you to the Anthology of American Folk Music blog for the explanation, by the way. So while the Bentley Boys song seems to detail this situation with distress, Dylan's is a more of a call to arms to better their situation. But that's not where the history between these two artists ends. The opening line to "Down on Penny's Farm" is as follows. "Come you ladies and you gentlemen and listen to my song. I'll sing it to you right, but you might think it's wrong. May make you mad, but I don't mean to harm. It's all about the renters on Penny's farm." Recognise them? That's right. We assume they served as inspiration for Bob's 1961 song, "Hard Times in New York Town," where the opening verse is this.
"Come you ladies and you gentlemen and listen to my song. Sing it to you right, but you might think it's wrong. Just a little glimpse of a star out of town, about an East Coast city that you all know well. It's hard times from the country, living down in New York town. Oh, New York City is a friend."
Back to Maggie's Farm though, and while it is pretty straightforward in terms of it's a blues song, it's a blues racket, and I mean that in a good way. It's one of the best live sounding songs of this era. Any number of cuts from any number of shows can tell you that, especially as we move into the decade after this one. This song really does have hidden depths. Like we'll see elsewhere in Bringing It All Back Home, Dylan often takes a left turn into the surreal. This is usually lyrically speaking. He doesn't dress it up in space guitars or weird effects. He subtly adds these ideas and themes in. In fact, it reminds me of a piece of art I saw years ago, and while it is unconnected to this song, it's a good visual representation of what I think is going on with this record. Years ago, I visited the Salvador Dali Museum in Catalonia, and there was one landscape there that caught my eye. For Dali, at least, it was a pretty straightforward landscape. However, he'd added a big red stripe in the middle, veering off to the left. He painted this beautiful picture, and he'd just thrown this huge odd thing right in the centre, like a child had come along and drawn something on a priceless painting. It made the whole thing conventional and normal and beautiful, but also slightly off in a brilliant way. We have the same thing here throughout this album. It's not a mad, crazy, off-the-wall, esoteric album that no one can really listen to. It's just got a hint of strangeness, an oddness lurking in the background, affecting things, distorting things even. This is something that is more than present in the lyrics to Mr. Tambourine Man, and also here as well. Bob sings, I ain't gonna work for Maggie's pa no more. No, I ain't gonna work for Maggie's pa no more. Well, he puts his cigar out in your face just for kicks. His bedroom window is made out of bricks. The National Guard stands round his door. I ain't gonna work for Maggie's pa no more. While we seem to be in real life, a window made out of bricks and putting cigars out in your face and the National Guard adds a sort of dreamlike, almost nightmarish quality. Many believe Bob could be hinting at President Lyndon B. Johnson here, who, again many believe, features on the follow-up album's track Tombstone Blues during that wonderful and again surreal passage about the Commander-in-Chief chasing a fly. While this is more than possible, I think it just confirms that Maggie's Farm is more of a feeling, an idea, than anything specific. It's an us versus them, one way of thinking versus another. And here in this song, it's time for war. Of course, this song is forever linked with the Newport Folk Festival and Dylan going electric. And while I don't want to tread over old ground again, it's interesting to note that the festival's production manager, Joe Boyd, claimed that the first note of Maggie's Farm was the loudest thing anybody had ever heard, which is a hell of an endorsement for a song. Of course, like everything of this nature, the whole myth of the famous folk darling Pete Seeger wanting to cut the stage's power cord because Dylan was betraying his folk roots is probably not true. He claimed in 2005 that there are reports of me being anti-him going electric at the 65 Newport Folk Festival, but that's wrong. I was the MC that night. He was singing Maggie's Farm and you couldn't understand a word because the mic was distorting his voice. I ran to the mixing desk and said, fix the sound, it's terrible. The guy said, no, this is what the young people want. And I did say that if I had an axe, I'd cut the cable, but I just wanted to hear the words. I didn't mind him going electric. Either way, it doesn't really matter. What matters is that listening to Maggie's Farm and Subterranean Homesick Blues in 2023, as I am right now, and reading these quotes, I'm not having to force my imagination, because both these songs still sound so thrilling. You know when people talk about early rock and roll sounding like a riot, and I'm sure it did in the context it debuted in, but when we listen with 21st century ears, we can often be disappointed by songs of that nature. Even some of the finest punk songs these days sound a little tame compared to what has followed. This is obviously not a revelation. Obviously, that's how the world works. That's how culture and time works, too. But, and this might be the Dylan superfan in me, but these two songs on Bringing It All Back Home still sound so fresh, so exciting. How does he do that? I think a lot of that has to do with how they were recorded. Dylan is not a fan of overdubs, especially not at this point, and he was burning through takes very, very quickly. Just look at how Another Side of Bob Dylan was made just in one night. That energy and that spontaneity has served these recordings well, and I think at times it's become Dylan's secret weapon over the years. Subterranean Homesick Blues comes so quickly in the studio. On the first day of recording, in fact, on the 13th of January 1969, Bob records it solo, and this version is available on the Bootleg Collection 1-3 from 1991. It's almost fully formed here, but it's very much a let's see what this sounds like sort of take. The next day, after getting Love Minus Zero No Limit, they move on to Subterranean Homesick Blues. There's a take available on the Cutting Edge bootleg, which is the first full band version. It's got a little more piano and a little more slip-ups than the version we know. Then they record a full start, then they get the take that makes the album. Done, and on to the next. Just six takes into the second session of the album, and already they have one of its major set pieces. It was captured in just one solo rehearsal, one full take and one full start. At the third and final session of the album, they start with Maggie's Farm, and they get it in one. While some songs on this album are in need of finessing, On the Road Again being probably top of that list, Maggie's Farm was not one. It was a one and done. Quite incredible, really. Bob got 6 of the album's 11 songs in that session. It was a creative burst that would define this era of his career. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Before we can dive into the recording of the album, we must go back to the start and work out what Bringing It All Back Home really meant to a young Dylan. And that's something we look at next time.
My love, she speaks like silence, without ideals of violence. She doesn't have to say she's faithful, yet she's true like ice, like fire. People carry roses and make promises by the
hour. That is it for this episode. I'm still, honestly, like I said there, flabbergasted about how good Subterranean Homesick Blues sounds. I have Apple Music, and there's one of the features is like there's a playlist called Get Up on there, which is a little bit annoying. But the idea is that you play it to kind of feel energized, maybe for like first thing in the morning or if you're going for a run or whatever. And Subterranean Homesick Blues was on my Get Up playlist recently, and it was in between two songs, one from like 2022 and a sort of new song as well. And Subterranean Homesick Blues, despite obviously definitely being older and sounding a little bit more lo-fi, the production though just sounded so, so great. And the song just sounded like it could have been released yesterday. A brilliant, brilliant listen, a brilliant, brilliant song. And I hope you enjoyed the episode on that and also Maggie's Farm as well. Next time, as I mentioned there, we're going to have a look at the sort of origins of this album. It comes out of, or at least Dylan starts writing a lot of the songs in a summer where he's essentially between two women, which, you know, is not unusual for this time of his career, I don't think. So we'll get to that next time. In the meantime, thank you once again for listening, and I'll see you down the road.